We'll get a view of the world from a motorbike in the Sahara Desert in just a bit on today's Travel with Rick Steves. First, though, I have the good fortune to talk with Terry Tempest Williams. She's hard to classify, but there's no doubt she's a remarkable voice whose intelligence, passion, and compassion are inspiring. She's an intellectual, a naturalist, and an outspoken environmental activist on behalf of her native Utah and the Western United States. Her books often read like poetry as she explores themes of spirituality, conservation, of natural history, women's issues, and of the impact of her family's Mormon heritage on her own identity today. In her latest book, When Women Were Birds, Terry tackles a mystery her mother left behind after her death, and she explores how that puzzle influences her own voice many years later. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's an honor to be on your program.
Utah is just a place that just has such drama, and it's so vast and magnificent in so many ways. And your family has been in Utah since Mormon pioneer days, hasn't it?
That's right. 5-6 generations.
Now, you wrote a book, When Women Were Birds. It's your latest book. Tell us, what is the premise of the book, and how does that relate to your value of your heritage and your homeland?
When Women Were Birds focuses on my mother's journals. My mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. She was dying. I was lying on the bed with her, rubbing her back. She was facing the window. It was a wicked January day. And she said, "Terry, I'm leaving you all my journals, but you have to promise me you won't look at them until after I'm gone." I gave her my word. We continued talking about other things. A week later, she passed. A month later, I found myself in the family home, and I thought, now, finally, I can know what my mother was thinking, feeling. She was a very private woman, Rick. The journals were exactly where she said they would be, 3 shelves, each one beautifully cloth-bound, unique. I opened the first one. It was empty. I opened the second one. It was empty. The third was empty. The fourth, the fifth, the sixth. Shelf after shelf after shelf, all my mother's journals were blank. So that's what this book is about. Why? What was my mother trying to say? What couldn't she say? Was she saying, fill them? Was it an act of defiance? Mormon women are expected to do 2 things, keep a journal and bear children. I don't know. It felt like a cruel joke. It felt like a second death. I remember just picking up the journals, putting them in my car, driving them home, putting them on my shelves, and through the years, you know, just writing in them unceremoniously. So it's really a book about voice. What is it? How do we find our voice? How do we keep it? If we lose it, how do we retrieve it? And I think each of us struggles with that.
This was your mother's gift to you then, was just a reminder to speak your voice, to find your voice, to fill up the journal of your life. Is that the idea?
You know, I don't know. Yes, I mean, it definitely has been a gift, what she bequeathed to me. But I'm not sure I will ever know what she was really trying to say. But what I love is that she gave me a mystery, almost like a Buddhist koan, a kaleidoscope that I just keep turning toward the light, and it always reveals a different configuration.
When young people are going to Europe and they want one piece of advice from me, I say, write a journal, write a journal. You'll treasure it for the rest of your life.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm a fan of your packing list. Mm-hmm. And I love that on that list is a hardbound journal. When you say it will be a treasure that you will keep always, the most important thing. And I believe that. I personally keep journals simultaneously, a notebook, a day book, a more formal journal, field notes, and they are precious. They serve as a sketchbook for me, but none are as precious as my mother's empty journals, and I still have some that I have not written in.
Wow.
And I think it is, in our culture, in Mormon culture, in Utah, there is a silencing that occurs from the dominant culture, and, you know, I hope that that's changing, but
a silencing. What do you mean by that, Terry?
Well, you know, I think as a woman, I can only tell you that, you know, I was raised not to speak out, not to rock the boat, make waves. And suddenly, because of the land that I love and the threat that it is under, this beautiful red rock wilderness, I have spoken out with many, many others. Mm. And I think there are some people that wish that I hadn't or wouldn't. And I just think if we care about the land, if we care about the open space of democracy, if we care about citizenship, then we do speak out. And my mother spoke out very strongly to her family. But outside, she was much more reticent. And I think her empty journals speak to that, that if she had written the truth of her life, she might have viewed it as a betrayal to those she loved, or you know, perhaps she was trying to protect those she loved, because if she told the truth, it would hurt.
We're visiting right now with Terry Tempest Williams on Travel with Rick Steves. Her latest book is called When Women Were Birds, 54 Variations on Voice. She also received high praise for her 1991 book called Refuge, An Unnatural History of Family and Place. And in her 2008 book, Finding Beauty in a Broken World, she weaves insights from a class in mosaic making in Italy with her journey to a village of genocide survivors in Rwanda. Terry's website is coyoteclan.com. I was fascinated by at the end of your book, you were arrested for demonstrating for the environment, and they frisked you, and they found a pen and a pad of paper. And the person who arrested you said, "What's this?" And you said, "Weapons."
Yes, that was in 1987, a long time ago. And in subsequent years, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, in Utah, and this is part of our atomic history in the West, nuclear bombs were tested above ground in the desert in Nevada from 1952 to 1961. Then they went underground and were repeatedly tested until 1992. So there were many of us here living in Utah and the American Southwest, you know, along with Native peoples, the Paiute people, the Shivwits people, and people from Kazakhstan who are sisters and brothers of nuclear testing. When I crossed that line at the Nevada test site in the name of civil disobedience, I not only crossed a physical line, but a metaphorical line, a political line. And yes, when I was frisked, pen and pad of paper, weapons, she let me keep them. I remember she discreetly, you know, left them in my boot, put my trouser down, and I was able to take notes.
Well, you were speaking out or writing out in interest of what you call the clan of one-breasted women.
Yes, 9 women in my family have all had mastectomies, 7 are dead. Half of my family has been diagnosed with cancer from radioactive fallout. It is a story, one story in an anthology of thousands in the state of Utah.
And the Atomic Commission, they had a booklet and you wrote about it, said, your best action is not to be worried about fallout. And then you talked about silenced, and your mother in this context said, just let it go. And then you just realized this is sort of a breakthrough moment, or not a breakthrough moment, but a chance to really step out of that straitjacket and just be honest.
I remember one sentence in particular, shaking as I wrote it. Blind obedience in the name of patriotism or religion ultimately takes our lives. And after that sentence, I couldn't go back. Right. But I can tell you, you know, my father, who's still alive, he's 79 years old. Members of my family, my uncle, who served in the Utah State Senate. Politics is changing in Utah because the people are changing, because we see our relationship to the land here and what it means to us. But it's not easy, and it takes revolutionary patience. And
it takes people who are written off as, what was the word, virtual uninhabitant?
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing that the government would call you and all the people that lived in that sort of corner of our beautiful country virtual uninhabitants.
Right. The bombs were tested never when the winds were blowing toward Los Angeles, always when they were blowing toward Indian lands and Mormon country, because we are God-fearing people, people that they perceived that didn't have voices.
It was fascinating to read how you remember a flash that you thought was a dream, but it actually, when you looked back on it, did it happen, do I do my arithmetic correctly, when you were 2 years old?
That's exactly right, Rick. And, you know, after my mother passed away, I kept having this reoccurring dream, this nightmare, this flash of light in the night in the desert, illuminating buttes and mesas over and over, this flash of light in the desert. My father and I were having dinner. He said, "Tell me how you are." I said, not well. I keep having this nightmare, this flash of light in the night in the desert." And he said, "Terry, you saw that. I thought you knew that." I was so stunned. He said, "I remember the day. It was September 7th. It was a day before your birthday. We were driving home from California. You were 2 years old. Diane was pregnant with Steve. You were sitting on her lap. We were driving toward Las Vegas. It was an hour or so before dawn. This explosion, I thought the oil tanker in front of us had blown up. We pulled to the side, and then rising from the desert, this golden-stemmed cloud.
My goodness.
The mushroom.
This was the flash that killed, indirectly, over time, half the women in your beautiful family.
Yeah, and my brother and others. You know, I think it was then I realized the deceit we'd been living under as children growing up in the American Southwest, drinking contaminated milk from contaminated cows, even the breast milk of our mothers, members of the clan of one-breasted women. Where sun and wind play on a ring of bright water, that's where in the first snow of winter, the gull in the sky winging free. But I always smile when a ring of bright water echoes your laughter to me. It echoes your laughter to me.
There's more in a minute as we look at the American West through the eyes of author and environmental activist Terry Tempest Williams today on Travel with Rick Steves. Her latest book is called When Women Were Birds. And later in the hour, we'll meet a tour guide from Italy who tells us what it's like to voyage solo across the quiet emptiness of the Sahara Desert. We're at 877-333-7425. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.